Right, I'm here at the Bolton in Earls Court talking to Peter Finch, probably known from Bet Racing Nation. Pete, thanks for agreeing to do this. Can you give us a bit of an introduction and then tell us how you first got interested in racing and gambling?
Yeah, I can do so. Basically, my father was a bookmaker in the East End of London growing up. My first recollection was actually back in 1975 when my mum and dad actually split up, so I didn't see much of my dad. So from about 7 age to about 12, 13, I didn't have much to do with him actually. But then, obviously, because I was soldered with my mum all the time, I think I was always interested in horse racing because of my dad, really. My dad was very keen on the horse racing, obviously, and had two shops in Leytonstone and one in Leighton, I do believe, in the East End of London. But as I got to my teenage years, obviously I got to see my dad a bit more, and that's where the, I'd say at the beginning, it's probably more of an addiction than anything else. I mean, my mum used to have a photograph of me. You can't do it now, but my mum used to have a photograph of me in all the betting shops. I must have been about 16 when she realised that I was gambling too much. So that's really how I started, and that's sort of 1984 when I started betting. My first memory would be a little bit before that, Grand Nationals, Ben Nevis, I think, would be my first memory. And then I had my success in Grand Nationals over the years. West Tips were the last one I've ever picked a winner for.
When you started gambling, I assume you used to lose like everybody else does. Did you have anybody, any sort of mentors that pointed you in the right direction?
No. And in those days, you don't get the information that you get now. I mean, it's fair to say that the wide variety of information you get now, before, you sort of have a race card and a newspaper, or you go in, and in those days it was a Sporting Life that was hanging from the betting shops, and you just pick a horse that you like. There's two that I remember. Beat the Retreat and Wing and a Prayer, kept winning week in, week out. That was probably when I was about 15, 16, used to go in the lunch times and just not have a clue really what I was doing and lose. And that led to some problems when I was younger, sort of 16, 17, where I used to, I think it's fair to say, sort of nick the odd quid here and there to feed the habit. And it wasn't too much later on that I understood it more.
So back in those days, any sort of memorable characters that frequented the betting shops that you used to bump into?
George Best was the biggest one I ever bumped into. He was in Paddington, probably 16, 17 at the time. He used to be in there quite often. Very, very nice guy, to be fair. I mean, obviously, I only saw him in the bookies, but I was very young, and I would always take notice of what he had to bet on. But generally, I think it's fair to say I was betting without having a clue. My main interest at that time was in football. Racing, I think it's fair to say, had an interest in it, but that was more because I was, I think, maybe trying to get close to my dad a little bit, because of the fact is that obviously he was working in that environment, and I think it was probably a way of sort of getting to know the industry through him, really. And it wasn't until 18, 19 that I then tried to get into media at that age, but I could never do it because I left school without no qualifications, and it was in those days you need the qualifications to get into it. And funny enough, after about 20, I mean, I continued to gamble, but it wasn't to the extent of understanding like I do now. And I actually spent a lot of time, I remember sending off audio tape to the BBC on the commentary, and they said, well, we liked your commentary, but because you're not in the industry, we're not going to take you on. And that was probably when I was about 20, 22. And then I just drifted away from the media side and worked totally in sort of in a sales environment for 10, 15 years. And it wasn't until, I think it was about 2004, when I was invited on a radio programme. And then by that time, I'm sort of in my 30s. And the person there said, after the first visit, do you want to do your own radio show? And that taught me a lot back then. And then I had my own morning programme whilst working. And the sort of media aspect grew from there. So it wasn't something that, from an early age, I wanted to do. And then it's sort of a big gap of 15 years before I actually did anything.
So how did you become a good punter as opposed to a mug punter?
I was a mug punter up to about 2000, so that would be to my early 30s. I think what you've got to understand, I think what people do and they make the mistake of, the biggest thing is they look at a particular performance and that resonates in their mind and they think, well, that's horse one's convincingly, I'm going to do it the next time. And I certainly used to back short favourites, used to back horses that, you know, you'd see win very easily. You think, oh, I'll back that next time. But obviously not taking into account so many things that you need to account for. Handicapper, for example, didn't really pay much attention to that. You've also got the situation whereby the low end of the handicaps, I didn't take much notice of, but I think there is a way of making money on those 0 to 100 handicaps, which I never really looked at before. It'd just be the big meetings. And I think a lot of people now make the mistake of going, right, Cheltenham's on, I'm using that hypothetically, Hereford's on, I've got a bet at Cheltenham. But if, to me, if a 10 to 1 winner at Hereford is just as good as a 10 to 1 winner at Cheltenham. And I would probably more look to Hereford and watch Cheltenham. So I don't really take into account those big meetings that are advertised so much. So a lot of studying now. You know, I would probably study for 2 hours a day, probably between 5 and 7 in the evening. Luckily, during the winter, I have that break anyway, so I'm able to really look into that. And there's so many things you need to look at, I think, when trying to back winners. And you can't chase as well, which is probably the most important aspect of it. And then, basically, what happened was I'd had a good piece of luck back in 2004. I worked for a company called Perform Group, and at the time dial-up was becoming broadband, and I worked with a number of football clubs, so I was lucky in a way that I made quite a lot of money in the early 2000s, 2004 up in 2012, so that accommodated the fact that I was able to do the radio show in the morning, and that taught me a lot about timing, about feedback, about talk back, about so many things about broadcasting. And then it came to 2012 and I left my job because after sort of 10 years, the money was made, it was much more difficult from having 30 people work for you to having one. It became a little bit depressing. So I went for a job, funny enough, at Betfair in Hammersmith. And I was offered the job. And then probably about a week before, they somehow managed to take someone on a freelance basis. So that sort of made me feel like I'm never going to get a job in horse racing, which was basically, along with football, a passion of mine. I'd worked on football. I'd done quite a lot of stuff for QPR, and actually used to be a drummer there. But more importantly, I'd done quite a lot of media stuff for QPR. The big game was Man City QPR. Everyone remembers that for the Aguero goal. So being there for that big game, the last day of the season, and doing commentary for QPR World and things like that was fantastic. So it was mainly football, but I wanted to get into horse racing. So everyone kept telling me what a close shop horse racing was. There's no doubt about the fact that it definitely is. So Betfair then let me down about a week before, and I thought, well, I'm a bit of a loose end here. And then a dear friend of mine, actually he's passed away now, John Feely, who I went to from a point of view of investment. Because the idea was to try and break the monopoly of what we see now with ATR and what we see now with Racing UK. And I still believe there is a market for an alternative view of racing. I think we're too pally-pally with jockeys, we're too pally-pally with trainers. You can't criticise anything. And we all know, people watch racing day in, day out, that things go on that should be questioned, really. But going back to that with the Bet Racing Nation, it was an idea, and it started, we'd done it very sort of secretively for 6 months where no one really knew about it. We was on air via the internet, and luckily the job at the time, Sports Night Live, enabled me to have the studio twice a week, and we had guests on there, you know, popular trainers, jump trainers especially, were very, very accommodating. Flat trainers, not so much. But the idea was to have an alternative, and I think to a degree we opened up a lot of doors. I think the biggest mistake I probably made, but I'm glad I made it, was the fact that we covered the fact that bookmakers weren't taking the bets. I think we were probably the first to do that. And I did get quite a lot of feedback, both on social media and through YouTube. And subsequent to that, Racing UK, probably about a week later, actually covered a programme on that. So I was very proud of the fact that we were, with the news element certainly that we did on the Thursday, I think we broke new ground, but unfortunately wasn't able to make it pay.
Pete, you mentioned account restrictions, and it's something that a lot of people get really annoyed about, because you don't have to be a big winning punter, even a big punter now, to have trouble getting on. How do you think that should be sorted out? Do you think we could ever make the bookmakers, you know, change their ways?
I mean, I could be wrong. I do believe that the only sport where you can't get, well, you can get a big bet on, but if you win, you get barred, is horse racing. So what are we saying? Are we saying that the sport is too open to people suspectedly in the know? Are we saying, talking about harbing? Are we talking about people nicking a price? Are we talking about traders of particular businesses not being strong enough in terms of marketing up? To me, if a company is going to put up a price the night before, they should be willing to take a small enough bet on it. Now, I've learned, unfortunately, over the last few years, that you have to have your bet small. I mean, I'd love to go in and put £100 each way on some of the winners that I've had recently, but if I did that, I know that I'd be barred. I mean, it's quite surprising, actually, that I did publicise on Twitter, a company, after one win, 33-1, that's backed into 18-1, has suspended my account or restricted my account. So what are we saying? Are we saying horse racing is bent? Are we saying horse racing is a sport that you can't have a good money back? I think it's more down to the fact that nowadays the focus for these big corporations, big companies, horse racing has gone down the league table compared to what it was years ago. It's probably number one, number two sport in the 20, 30 years ago. Now you've got football, you've got NFL, you've got golf, you've got cricket, you've got anything you can bet on. I think horse racing requires a stronger skill set to be able to back winners, and the odds are quite often not quite right. And I had a big argument about value, but to me value is all about winning. If you get the value and you've won, that's value. But if you've got the value and it loses, you've lost. So
there's a bookie I know used to say, you can eat value.
No, you can't.
Now, you mentioned it's not easy, and you're a successful punter these days, and you've got a lot of followers on Twitter because you give your bets away for free. Why on earth do you do that?
I always thought to myself, well, if you make money from tipping up horse racing, then why do you need to charge for it? Why would I put up a... When I'm working, I mean, if situations change, obviously, and I find myself not working in 3 or 4 months' time or 6 months' time, then there might be a need to charge for it. But if I'm working and I'm making an extra living from betting, I don't see the need to charge for that. And I look at it as a game of cat and mouse. It's always punter versus the bookmaker. And what's not been addressed, and you have this with so many tipsters that are put up, you see these links to other bookmakers, and you think you don't get into bed with them. There should be someone out there, and hopefully we can do that, is have someone against the bookmakers. It's not in a nasty way. It's in a this is cat and mouse industry. Bookmakers make millions. There have been cases where there have mergers for billions. We have been too much, or certainly a number of people have been too much in bed with bookmakers to actually affiliate with them, and to my detriment, actually, going back to Bet Racing Nation, probably because we didn't have the affiliates strong. That's probably why I had to go, because we weren't making loads of money. We had one or two sponsors, and I would like to thank Betfred for sponsoring us at the time, because they were the only ones that, only big events, but they were the ones willing to do that. What you've got now is a situation where there is definitely a marketplace for people to work against the bookmaker, not for them. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you see, we'll have more restricted accounts, no doubt, but if you see odds, the more people that are trying to get those on for the benefit of themselves as opposed to the benefit of the bookmakers, I think benefit everyone. And you don't want to see people putting up race after race. There's 7 race cards. You don't want to see tips every day for each race, because that way you just can't make the money.
Okay, you mentioned before you see things every day that should be maybe looked into. What's your opinion on, for example, all-weather racing as opposed to jumping all flat? Is there one code that you think straighter than another?
That's a good question. I mean, as an enthusiast, I prefer the jump racing. I've seen a lot of things go on in the all-weather over the winter that I think when you've watched... people say, oh, you're not a jockey or whatever. I'm able to be quite a good judge. And I've seen thousands of races. And when a jockey doesn't want to win on an all-weather and a horse that is handicapped for the future, they will not win. I'm not going to name names, but there are definitely a few out there that are on sort of top of my five list. That if, and you learn every day at this game, you know, you might notice something, if, well, I'm not going to back that again if it's an outsider and it should be shorter. But you do pencil these in, and you do see certain jockeys that will endeavour to try their best when the money's down, and not so much when there's a big drifter. Do I take notice of exchanges? It's difficult not to, but I think the more competitive the race, I think you shouldn't take too much notice of it. If you've got a four-runner race and you've got an odds-on shot the night before that suddenly drifts, then I think you should take notice of it. But in competitive racing, I don't take too much notice of that. If you've got a 15-runner race and the horse has drifted, I think it's even better, because, you know, you might even put more on. I mean, and vice versa. I mean, people following me would realise that I did an all-weather horse actually trained by Carl Burke that was 33-1 in the morning. Now, the night before, I didn't actually put it up, but I did put it down. I did have a bet on it, 14-1. The next morning, I look, it's 33s. So I'm winning again, and I think that's the part of trying to guess the prices, trying to see where it is. That 33-1 became 8-1 before the off, and it won. And always, it's not always going to happen like that. But sometimes you shouldn't let a horse that drifts in the market put you off your original instinct of backing that particular horse.
Well, you say you don't take any notice. I try not to take notice of the exchanges. What about these people? You put your bets up on Twitter. Mm. Sometimes they win. More often than not, they win. Sometimes they lose. And when they lose, out come the trolls from under their bridge.
Yeah.
How do you cope with those sort of people? I mean, what do you think about the nature of Twitter, etc. these days?
I laugh it off, to be honest with you. I think it's quite funny that people can troll. The good thing is that I might be wrong, but I think I'm the only one that... Well, there are a couple of other people, actually, but, you know, put their bets up beforehand. You can't go around putting up after and go, well, I've had this 33-1 shot, you should have been part of it. So they're all there for to see. I mean, we've done the October challenge, whereby we started off with 1,000, made £600-odd, then November. The first 15 days of November, anyone following the selections that I put up, the first 15 days... It was a little bit like, oh, do I keep doing this? Because I was down quite a bit on the first 15 days of November, and I didn't have that many people actually troll me out, to be honest with you. But I have done since the new year, and after sort of a few losers this week. But over the period of time, people have got to understand, when they're betting, it's not what happens on the day, and it may not be what happens over 2 weeks. We set a 50-day challenge. The first 15 days, that was down. After day 45, 46, it was over £2,000 up. By the end of it was about £1,700, I think, up. So it's how you bet and not react to that day. So what I mean by that is, day one, you bet, you lose £50. Now some people will think, oh, I've got to double my money, or I've got to have another bet on the last race just to get my money back. That's the worst thing you can do. There's always tomorrow. I think what people also tend to do is they see a 6-4 and think, well, I say your betting bank is 100, and they think, well, I'm going to bet £100 on 6-4, and they look at another one and they see a 7 or 8-1 shot in another race, and they think, I really, really like that one, but I'm going to put £20 on that. Now, what I've learned over the years is if you really like that 7-to-8-to-1 shot, don't put less money on it. In fact, the bookies want you to put less money on it, just like they want you to do these big, massive ACCAs. I mean, you go in any shot window, you've got a return of £25 if you do a 5-team ACCA, you get bonuses if you do a 6-team ACCA. They want accumulators, they want lucky 15s, they want Yankees, they want Goliaths. That is what they want. And they market it superbly to make you think that is the best way of betting. Exactly the way they do on the big races, the big handicaps. I mean, I had people tweet me on regarding the Welsh National, the Grand National, the Hennessy. I mean, the Hennessy was actually won well by a Mullins horse, but generally the big competitive race of the day, people say, oh, what do you fancy in that race? I'd say keep well away. I go back to the point, a 5-to-1 winner is as important at Wolverhampton, Hereford, Lingfield, Hexham. It's just as important as Cheltenham or the Sandowns or anything of this world. If you're betting horses, you can enjoy watching the big competitive races, but there's money to be had on the other meetings, and that's what bookmakers don't want you to focus on. They also don't like the single. You never walk past a shop and you see, oh, come in for a free 50% bonus if you back a 6-to-1 shot, £100. They do not want that. They want people betting in masses on favourites. There are a lot of poor favourites out there, and people, in my judgment, are a little bit too lazy in terms of what they select. So you've got to be, A, you've got to be selective, B, you've got to go for the single, and don't disregard the price. Disregard the price. If you fancy something, do it.
So don't you think then that you should have a little bit of a fairy tale and do an ACCA or a Lucky 15 on a Saturday row of houses for a quid? Are you going to be that miserable that we can't do an ACCA?
Well, you can do an ACCA. I mean, I always put a little each way ACCA at the end of my bets, you know, a couple of quid. But I mean, I put it into context. I can win quite a lot during the year. It won't be the big sort of 10,000-15,000 pound payouts. But betting from 1984, like I alluded to earlier on 16, my biggest win was a Goliath, but that was in 1997, I think. It was about 10 grand, 97. So it took me 13 years to win that massive Goliath. And then another couple of years to win another one that was quite big. But what I'm saying is you can win more often by doing the singles. Do things that irritate the bookmakers. Don't do things that they want you to do. They're going to market, they're going to advertise superbly, and the majority of people will go for what they do. But think outside the box. Think, how am I going to make money from this? At the end of the day, you're betting to make money. You're not betting for the enjoyment of it. If there's no enjoyment of losing a couple of £100 on a big race at Cheltenham or Grand National or anything like that, you can work things out. You have to study hard. You have to look into all the aspects that you can. We ain't going to win every day at this game. And I think that's the most important factor. You can go through weeks. I mean, I can go through 25 picks without a winner. It's what happens. And you'll find, I liken it to a poker player. You can be very good at this. You still need that bit of luck.
I hear through the grapevine that there's another bit of media coming our way, at least in a collusion with you. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a book. We're planning it actually now with Amy Christophers. Now, everyone look at her and think, oh, she's a glamour sex model and things like that. But she's got a knowledge of betting and sports betting. And I feel a degree of loyalty to people. One of my biggest things is loyalty. And going very quickly back to Bet Racing Nation and Sports Night Live, I always wondered before why people didn't have time to answer emails or phone calls. And generally at that particular time, when you're running the Sports Night Live and you're running Bet Racing Nation, everyone wants to be your friend. Everyone wants to ring that phone. There's a Pete, I want to present this, I want to do that and do this and do that. When it's over, you don't hear a sausage from anyone. And only one person actually, after all that finished, from now really, has kept in touch. So I feel a degree of loyalty to her. She's found it difficult. She found it much easier now, but when she first broke away from her modelling to get into sports, I think she found it difficult. She's opening many more doors now. So I thought, yeah, you know, with her popularity and my knowledge on the industry and things like that. I think we're going to, I mean, originally we're going to do it for March. I think it'll probably be in hindsight a little bit later. But the idea is to encourage people to get into racing.
So what is the topic of the book? Is it come racing? Is it punting?
It's more, I think she wants to go with Bet Like a Boss. I think we might well go along those lines to get people understanding betting. I mean, I don't want people to take 20 odd years to understand the format of horse racing like I probably did, and there's so many different aspects to it, and I think that's sort of half the problem, because you get, everyone has it, and family members ring them up at Grand Nationals, oh Pete, have you got a tip for the Grand National? No, I haven't. You know, you might as well pick a number, three numbers in the lottery, you know. So people, they don't understand it. I think it's quite a complicated aspect. How you draw those people in is difficult. I mean, you've got the marketing aspect of it, that people would love the big day out. So, you know, you see Rowan Ascot, and you go to Rowan Ascot, and people there haven't got a clue about horse racing. I mean, I have people saying, well, what's each way? I think knowledge is important, and I think making it enjoyable for people to understand the sport is an aspect that we don't focus on. And I also think that we're fortunate in as much as we have a sport that goes out every single day of the week. They can get around it by saying we're the second highest viewed sport in the country. That's true, but we are on every day. How many people that go racing understand the sport, apart from having a good dinner, good drink or whatever? They don't really, there's always that mate of yours that, you know, you go to for a tip. But I just wish we made it a bit easier for people outside the industry to understand, because it's great. The ownership aspect of and I've been fortunate to own a few horses before, the ownership aspect is an area that could be pushed a little bit more. The syndicates, when you feel part and parcel of a day and you take away the corporate side of things, there's nothing better than going and having being part of a horse that's then running. So I think maybe ownership and syndicates and people more involved in the horses themselves, I think that can play a part in getting more people in. And then going back to the younger side of things as well, you know, how do you get people attracted to the sport? I think you don't see many changes in horse racing, because I think it's a convenience for a lot of people. I once spoke to a commentator and said, you know, how long have you been in the job and would you ever leave it? And he said to me, I'll be doing the job to the day I die. And that is the unfortunate thing in a way with racing. It's very stagnant, it's not open to change. It is a closed shop. People say, oh, it is a closed shop. It very much is. And you need, we're in 2018 now, all these other sports that wouldn't come near to racing in the past. Darts, cricket, you know, two that were behind horse racing back in the late 80s, early 90s. They've all moved on, and racing has not moved on, and it needs to. I don't know how that's done, but it needs to have figureheads at the head of the game to actually make it more exciting and people understand in the sport, because it is a fantastic sport to get involved with.
For the latest political betting news and odds, check in with our expert William Kajani at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.